1 Peter chapter 5. We've got communion this morning. You see, the Lord's table is ready for us. And so what we're going to do now is to have a good look at God's word. Then we're going to sing a hymn, and then we're going to come around the communion table. Oh, no, Cliff, could you just get a glass of water, please? Yeah, thanks. Okay, so let's look then at from 1 Peter and chapter 5. Now, on Sunday mornings, we are working our way through 1 Peter, and we're coming to the end of this series, and this morning we reach verse 7, which says, "Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you." Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. And this is one of the reasons why we told the children not to worry. Thank you very much. Okay, it is water, isn't it? Yeah. What a great invitation. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Do you know, one of the things about us being here this morning is that we are alive. We've got life flowing through our veins. We've got a pulse that pulsates. We've got a heart that beats, a breath to breathe, and a life to live. And it's good to think about how we're using our lives, especially when you get to those significant birthday times, like 40 years old for Jane Saper yesterday, like 50 years old for Jenny Batten today. I think she's probably missed it, yeah. And other people with birthdays today as well, and yesterday. But it's good just to stop and think about how am I using my life? Because each one of us wants to make the most of our life, to live well. So you can get endless books which will tell you about how to get the most out of life. So, for example, there is one book which is simply entitled Getting Your Best Life Ever, available on Kindle, paperback, and hardback. Another one entitled Living Your Best Year Ever, Kindle only, $5.99. Another one that says Principles of Life, All You Need to Do to Live the Best Life Ever, used paperback, one penny. And you can go on all kinds of courses and learn all kinds of techniques to be mindful and purposeful and positive about how to use your life and to get the best life ever. Well, Jesus also was really concerned that we should have the best life we could ever have. See, Jesus wasn't just concerned to get us to heaven. He wanted us to learn how to live now. For sure, he was very concerned about getting people to glory. And he spoke a lot about heaven and hell as well. So really, he wanted people to get to glory. But he also said on one occasion, I have come to bring you life, and life to the full. Not just I have come to take you to heaven, but I've come to bring you life here and now. And Jesus spent so much of his life teaching. So let's not reduce the life of Jesus to three significant points: his birth, his death, and his resurrection. So many people think that's what Jesus was just all about. We celebrate his birth, we celebrate his death, we celebrate his resurrection. Wonderful things to celebrate. But Jesus had 3 years, three whole years of teaching, just about every day, teaching for 3 years about how to live life now. And he gave us instruction, wisdom, direction, and commands to follow and to obey so that we would live the best life ever. So when it comes to the teaching of Jesus, don't just sort of have it there and accept it as you would a cookie policy without reading what's going on. But read it, study it, and find out what Jesus has to say. And you will see that he says on more than one occasion, do not worry. Do not worry. Oh, great, you say, I'm a worrier, and now I'm even more worried because this command of Jesus, do not worry, and I'm worried I'm not keeping it. So thank you very much for bringing me here this morning. But when Jesus gives this command, do not worry, He gave it not to ruin our life or increase our anxiety, but to help us enjoy life and live it to the full. We so often have unbiblical views of commands. And we see commands as something which is to restrain us, and God wanting to ruin our lives and take all the fun out of our life. So we look upon the commands as very negative things. But actually, God's commands are very positive things. The right view of the commands is given in the book of Deuteronomy, where Moses said, "These commandments I give you today are your life." They're your life. So we can really enjoy life and live life to the full when we realize God's commands are for our good. So this command then about do not worry is not to increase our worry, but to increase the enjoyment of life. In fact, when we worry, our enjoyment of life reduces. There's a poem around written by a little boy called The Worms of Worry Burrowing Around His Brain. That's an amazing picture of worry, isn't it? You've got these worms in your head. You can't think about anything else. All these worms just crawling around you, just monopolizes you. Worry affects our life in many ways. Worry can weigh us down. It can distract our mind. It robs us of our peace. Worry is bad for our health. Worry ruins our relationship with God and very often with people as well. So Jesus said, do not worry. Not to make us more worried, but to improve the quality of our life. Now the apostles also took up the teaching of Jesus then. So when Simon Peter writes here in chapter 5 and verse 7, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you, then Simon Peter would have learnt this directly from Jesus. And the apostles were commanded to pass on to us the words they heard from Jesus. So let's think of three things from this verse this morning. One, our anxiety. Two, God's care. Three, our casting. So first of all, our anxiety. Not a very nice thing to think about, I know. But Peter says, cast all your anxiety. Your anxiety. That assumes, of course, that we will have anxieties. If we didn't have such a thing as worry or anxiety, then Peter would never have bothered to write this, and Jesus would never have bothered to say, do not worry. It's because worry and anxiety are very real things that we've got commands about them. And indeed, we do all have our own individual worries and anxieties. We've got them. Some people seem to get by throughout life without any worries at all. They're kind of laid back, Dylan-like from The Magic Roundabout, who was constantly stoned, I'm told. But some people just go through life just indifferent. They're life's avoiders in many ways. They're just not bothered. It's not that they haven't got any cares, they just care less. And they make no decisions. They leave it all to other people. And such people are actually really quite infuriating. So some people can pretend to go through life without any worries. But most people worry a little. Some worry a lot. And some people are chronic worriers. And Simon Peter acknowledges that even Christians worry and have anxieties. So therefore, he says, your anxiety, whatever it is, cast it on the God who cares for you. Now, I don't want to belittle worry in any way in what we're saying this morning. And I know that Jesus wouldn't have wanted to do that either. Because for many people, worry is a real problem. And we all struggle with something. Some might struggle with jealousy, some struggle with anger, some struggle with forgiveness, some struggle with lust, some struggle with greed, and some really struggle with anxiety or worry. It can monopolize their life, it can dictate their outlook, ruin their enjoyment, and even make them ill. Some worries can lead to general anxiety disorder and acute stress disorder. So worry is a really serious thing, and we're not playing it down in any way this morning. We are aware of its existence and of what it can do to us. The meanings of the word worry, apparently our English word worry, comes from an old English word which means strangle. The word anxiety comes from an Indo-German word which means a narrowing or a tightening of the feelings in your chest or throat. The Greek word that Peter uses here for anxiety is a word that means to separate into parts or to divide in different directions. Hence, we get the idea of distraction. So when you've got this anxiety, you can't think straight, you can't concentrate, the worms of worry do burrow in your brains. So it's a very real thing. Now, there's many books out about worry. Don't worry if you haven't read them. Many books about worry. One of the best ones I've come across, I haven't read it all, but it's this one by Timothy Lane called Living Without Worry. And the bits I have read of this book, really good, really helpful. And if you want to know a reminder of today's sermon, this, read this book. In that book, he's got this kind of a spectrum thing. Okay, this line with three dots on it. And he speaks about worry as over-concern. So, on these three dots, you've got godly concern right in the middle. That's where we should be, godly concern. Godly concern is a good thing. Being concerned about the right things is a really good thing. So it's right to be concerned about your safety, your finances, your job, your health, your children, your families, a dozen daily duties, making provision, and your responsibilities. It's really good to be concerned about those things. Down the line is indifference. When somebody is indifferent about all those things, then they couldn't care less. And that is not a good way to live. We are to be concerned about the right things. So we don't want to live down the line of godly concern. Nor do we want to live up the line of godly concern, which becomes over-concern. And over-concern is worry and anxiety. It's a bad thing. It can ruin us. And it can actually make us idolaters about the things we worry about. Now, it's that over-concern that we should cast on the Lord. The concerns that we should have, we should rightly have and deal with them with wisdom from God. It's our responsibility. But to worry about them, to be over-concerned about them, that's what we've got to cast on God. Where do anxieties come from? Well, anxieties are the result of over-concern about certain things. Let's think of a few areas that anxieties come from. Sometimes our anxieties can simply be our own fault, that we can desperately desire something we don't really need, that thing is not essential to our life. It's nice to have, but it's not essential. And yet we become fixated by that particular thing that we've got to have. And we can convince ourselves that it's essential for our life. And actually we can get all screwed up about it when it's just not that important. But we've made it that important in our life. In the Old Testament, you read about an ungodly king called Ahab, who had many vineyards, but there was one vineyard he didn't have. It belonged to a man called Naboth. And Ahab just made himself ill, had to lie on his bed, because of his concern, over-concern, to get this vineyard. It actually resulted in him having Naboth murdered so he could get the vineyard. That kind of worry and anxiety is our own fault. If we're desperately after something we don't essentially need and screwing ourselves up about it, then whose fault is that? Likewise, if we're doing something naughty and we know that we shouldn't do it, we're going to get worried about that, about being found out. So if we're involved in fraud or cheating or lying or deceiving or having an affair or a fling or doing something unethical at work, we're going to be really worried about that. We're going to be really worried about the knock on the door or the call. Now, the remedy for those kinds of worries that we bring upon ourselves, the remedy really is quite easy. Stop it. Stop it. This is as easy as that for those kinds of worries, the worries that we bring upon ourselves because of something naughty or because of desiring something we don't need. But worry goes deeper than that, and there are some worries that seem to come upon us, not because we're doing something bad, but because of something good. So, for example, our faith. Simon Peter was writing to a church that was undergoing persecution. And that persecution was desperate. If you look at chapter 4, verse 12, Peter says, "Dear friends, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal that has come on you to test you." Verse 13, "Rejoice inasmuch as you participate in the sufferings of Christ." Chapter 4, verse 14, "If you are insulted because of the name of Christ." And so it goes on. The whole context of 1 Peter is that of suffering and persecution. Now, can you imagine? I can't quite imagine it myself, but can you imagine living in a situation of persecution? Can you imagine the worries that would come about if you were living in a situation of persecution? If you're the breadwinner, and you're going to get taken off to prison, who's going to provide for my family? If you know that the Roman Empire were putting people to death because of their faith, then you might think, how am I going to endure this suffering? So the worries that might have come upon this early Christian church was simply because of their faith. And that might well be the context. Why did Peter all of a sudden write in verse 7, "Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you"? There's been nothing to lead up to that and nothing that follows on from that. So why suddenly just put that verse in? Did he just have a blessed moment of a thought? No, he did it because of the context that's going on here. So he's spoken about God's mighty hand. And God's mighty hand does some very strange things at times. And God's mighty hand humbles us. And the persecution they were undergoing was humbling them. So Peter says to them, if this is your situation, cast all your anxiety upon God. I can fully understand why you'll be over-concerned about this. I can fully understand that you're going to be worrying about this. But you take that worry and you cast it upon God. And it's the same with us. We noted last week when we looked at those verses, God's mighty hand brings us into really strange situations that we don't understand. And we would say to God, if I were you, I'd do it a different way. But God's mighty hand leads us and he guides us. And at those times when we are worried and have anxiety about the circumstances of life that we're in, then what do? We give them to God. A third kind of area of worry is just comes from being alive in a fallen, broken world. Jesus spoke a number of parables, and one of his parables was the parable of the sower. And there Jesus said, there's the worries of this life which choke the word. So there's anxieties that come about simply because of phobias, which there seem to be an increasing amount around these days. They can be real, crippling and limiting. There can be worries that we have because of our past. Maybe there's a memory of something bad that we've been part of or has happened to us, and we're afraid that that's going to be repeated, and a trigger situation sets off all those memories of what we went through a month ago or 10 years ago, and that can produce anxiety. Or there can be that over-concern about normal things: health, job, family, money, safety. Or we can get anxious because there's too much to do and we think we're just not going to get it done. Or we can get anxious because of our work. There's a project we've got to do. There's a target we've got to reach. There's a sale we've got to make. There's staff we've got to deal with. There's a boss that's constantly angry. And there's a workload that's put upon our desk or in our inbox, which we think, I'm never going to get home tonight. All these things can make us anxious and worried and over-concerned. And Peter acknowledges, and Jesus acknowledges, that worries come our way. So we're liable to have worry and anxiety. And yet Jesus says, do not worry. Well, isn't that then a little bit unrealistic? Isn't it a little bit simplistic? With all those areas of worry we've been thinking about, and then we read Jesus saying, do not worry, we might think, well, yeah, he was a bachelor. He had a very simple kind of life in the first century. Would he say the same today to a married man? Yes, he would, because his teaching is eternal. Do not worry. How? Well, it depends on our view of God and our willingness to ask him for help. So let's consider our second point here. We've thought a lot about ourselves and our anxieties, your anxiety. Now think about God's care. It's very clear there in verse 7 that God cares for you. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. What's your view of God? What do you believe God is? Who do you believe he is? What is the God you worship? What is his name? What is he like? And what is his nature? Who is God? Is your view of God some distant deity living far, far, far away, remote, uninterested? Is your God made of wood, stone, costly metal, who has no heart? Then if your God is a false God, then you end up carrying your God and being concerned about your God. But if your God is the real God, he ends up caring for you and being concerned for you. The Bible tells us that God is a personal God and that God cares. Just if you could take out all the other words of verse 7 and just leave the two words in that he cares, it's an amazing thing. God cares. He's not distant. He's not unconcerned. He's close. Psalm 34 says that God's eyes are on us. His ears are attentive to our cry. Isaiah chapter 40 verse 11 says that our God carries his people like a shepherd carries a lamb. Jesus said that I care about my sheep. Our God cares. He really is a caring God. And the Bible tells us he's a loving heavenly father. And a father cares more for us than we do for ourselves. He's a father who doesn't want us to sink under life's worries. He's a father who wants us to thrive in this age. So God is a God who cares. He cares for us. Don't worry about the computer. Don't worry about the screen. It will be back in time. This is what they call the BSOD, isn't it? Blue screen of death. Somebody technically minded, help Hannah out, please. Thank you, Colin. Right, well, that's going on. Let's think about the God who cares. So he cares. But Peter didn't just write the two words, he cares. He actually writes the words, he cares for you. He cares for you. He knows us. He knows us by name. Now, this Lord Jesus Christ, who cares for people, who knows us by name, he is now exalted to the highest heaven. They crucified him. They buried him. 3 days later, he rose from the dead. And in that resurrection, he overcame the most powerful thing ever, death itself. So he lives as the one who is controlling all things, for all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to him. So let's picture this Lord Jesus, who is so powerful, so majestic, so mighty after his resurrection. Let's picture him now, this powerful God, who comes to a garden, who sees a lady in tears and says, Mary, do you see? Do you see that he cares for you? You might say, this God has got billions of people to care for. But he cares for you, Mary. No, this is a distinctive mark of the Christian faith, that we have a God who is up close and personal, near to us, and who loves us. And Simon Peter experienced this for himself. On one occasion, Simon Peter was in a boat with the other disciples, and there was a terrific storm that blew up, and such a bad storm that this boat was sinking. Jesus was asleep in the boat. So the disciples actually go over. They think, we've got to wake Jesus up. How do you wake Jesus up? Who dares do that? But they're going to wake him up, and they wake him up, and the first thing Jesus hears from them when he's woken up by them is this: don't you care that we're going to perish? It's Mark chapter 4. Don't you care? Oh, it's a ridiculous thing to say, because Jesus is the person who cares the absolute most. And he showed he cared by stilling the storm and taking away their anxieties. So he cares for you. This is the God we worship. Now, I had a really good slide at this point that Ellen sent through to me earlier in the week. And this slide shows us some of the attributes and the characteristics of God that cares for us. But hey, there you go. Let's come then to our third and final point here. We've seen our anxiety. We've thought about the God who cares. So thirdly, casting. Cast all your anxiety on God. Now, it makes sense, doesn't it? So here's us with our anxieties, and here's God with his care and concern. What then should we do with our anxieties? Should we keep them for ourselves? Or should we cast them on him? Now, this word for cast that Peter uses, we would think that being a fisherman, he's used to casting things. So maybe he's thinking about casting out a rod or casting out a net, throwing it out. But the actual word here for cast is used in Luke chapter 19 and verse 35 on the day of Palm Sunday, when people took their coats and cast them, threw them on the donkey. It's exactly the same word. So they took that and threw them on something. That's the idea of this word cast. Let's take our anxieties and take our over-concerns and our worries, and we throw them upon God. Now, that takes effort. Can't be some kind of Mary Poppins clean-up song where, you know, spoonful of sugar, and as if by magic, the clothes go in the drawers and the doll's house gets cleared up and all the toys are off the floor. It's like, wow, wouldn't that be nice? But this is effort. To cast something takes work. So how do we do that? How do we actually cast our care upon the Lord? And notice that Peter says in verse 7, cast all your anxiety. So whether it's big or whether it's small, all your anxiety cast upon the Lord. How? How in practice? How do we actually do it? Well, let's turn to Philippians chapter 4. This tells us how we do it. Philippians chapter 4. And in Philippians chapter 4, the Apostle Paul writes these words. Philippians 4, verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again. Rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Well, that's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Very clear. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything or every situation, by prayer and petition, present your requests to God. How do we do this? We pray about it. And in doing that, we're rolling our over concern on the Lord. So think about this just a little bit more for a minute or two. Remember we spoke about, we had that line up there of indifference, godly concern, and over-concern. Well, the godly concern things, we've got to get on with ourselves. It's not as if we are by ourselves, because God has promised to give us wisdom if we ask him, and we need his wisdom to do certain things. So, but the concerns, the good things, the concerns and the good things, we just got to get on with. So we get on with looking after our family. We get on with our job. We look after our safety. We are concerned about our money, our health, our responsibilities. We've got cares of duty for all of these things. So we get on with them. But what very often happens is that from those good things, when we start to worry about the consequences, the result and the outcome, that's where the over-concern and the worry comes. So we've got the things we've got to do them. But the results, the outcomes, the consequences, which we have no power over, we've got to leave with the Lord. That's how we cast our anxiety upon him. So get on with what we've got to get on with, and then say, Lord, I leave the results to you. So, examples. Maybe you've got something wrong with your health at this particular time. You've had some tests, and there's been something that's shown up, and you're really concerned about it. Rightly so. So, what do you do? Well, you've got to have the operation, or you've got to take the course of medicine or the treatment. That's our responsibility. That's our concern. Your health can be sorted out many times. Your health, which is really important to you, you take the tablets, you have the operation. Where does the worry come? The worry comes from, what's the consequences of this? What will happen in the operation? What will happen as a result of this medicine? You've got no control over that. So don't worry about it. That's the anxiety. That's the over-concern. So get on with what you've got to get on with and leave the consequences with God. Likewise, maybe you've got a very responsible position at work. And that responsible position, your boss is pushing you for results. Or maybe there's some things you've really got to sort out, even tomorrow. Or there's some conversations you've got to have, and you're not looking forward to them at all. And in your responsible position at work, what do? Well, you've got to do what you've got to do. You've got to go to work. You've got to make those decisions. You've got to do your best. Use all your professional skills that you've got. You've got to pray to God for wisdom in that situation. Where then is the worry? The worry is the results, the consequences, the outcome. What will happen if I have this discussion? You've got to have the discussion. What will happen? It's not your responsibility. You've got to do what you've got to do. Leave the over-concern to God. Pray to him about that. Or you've got children to bring up, and you're really concerned about your children. Rightly so. And so what's your responsibility? Loving parenthood. Wise parenthood. Asking God for wisdom in all your concerns. But you can't worry about the outcome. You can't worry about how they will turn out. You can't do that. Because in one sense, you have no power over that. You've got to do what you've got to do. Being a responsible parent, cast your anxiety on the Lord. One more example. Big decisions that you have to make in your family or in your personal life. You've got to take those decisions, and you're really concerned to make the right decision. Good. We should be concerned. You pray to God for wisdom to make the right decision, and then you take the decision. Where's the worry? What's going to happen next? The concern, the over-concern, is the consequences, the result. Cast that over-concern on the Lord. So when Peter says here, cast all your anxieties on the Lord, Paul then tells us how to do it with prayer and petition. We don't look on what we cannot do or the things that we have no power over. but we look to God who has power over everything. See, when we worry and have anxiety, it's actually a little bit of pride there, because we are thinking that we're responsible for the consequences and the outcome. And remember the context of 1 Peter, humble yourselves under God's mighty hand. Cast all your anxieties on him. So casting our anxieties on God is actually a humble thing to do. Did Jesus ever worry? Was Jesus ever anxious? Was he ever tempted to be anxious and worry? What about all those crowds he had to deal with? What about all the teaching he had to do? What about the cross he had to go to? Do you know what was Gethsemane all about? Viewing the cross in the distance, actually just a couple of hours away. And what was Jesus doing in Gethsemane? He was thinking about the cross, but he was praying. In Gethsemane, he was praying, and he was praying deeply. And he was casting upon the Lord, his God, his Father, all the consequences and the fruit and the result of the cross. So Jesus said, your will be done. So Jesus went through with the cross because that was his responsibility. That was his work. And then, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. He left the outcome with God. And when we think about that cross, we realize just how much God is concerned for us. You see, the reality of us casting our anxieties on God depends upon the view we have of God. So if we do think that he's a God who can care for us, then we will do that. We will cast our anxiety on him. And the cross actually shows us that he cares, that he's concerned. You know, thanks for getting the computer working again, because there's this one graph, that chart that I really want to show you. I came across it, can't remember where. That when you become a Christian, the new birth, okay, you think about God's grace, and you think about your sin. And you think the Christian life is a little bit of a journey that sort of goes between those two, God's grace and our sin. But actually, what you find in the Christian life is that the journey is that you appreciate God's grace more and more. As you go on in the Christian life, you realize how gracious he is, and your appreciation of that gets better and better. But you're also more aware of your sin. And you're aware of your sin and of the depth of your sin deeper and deeper. And this is the Christian life, that we grow with an awareness of God's grace and an awareness of our sin. Now, when you first become a Christian, the cross is there. The cross is real. The cross is God's grace, and it takes away our sin. It's there right at the beginning of the Christian life. But as you go on in the Christian life, the cross gets bigger. And it's actually exactly the same as it ever has been. But your appreciation of the cross, it gets bigger. And so therefore our knowledge of God and of his concern for us it's always the same, but our acknowledgement of it should get bigger and deeper. The cross takes away our sin. On the cross, Jesus dealt with everything. And so Peter says, cast all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you, and the cross proves it.